Hello and welcome to this week's TES News Podcast. I'm news reporter Catherine Love and joining me is TES senior analyst Gráinne Hallahan. Following a big announcement from Ofqual and the DfE on exams, we speak to education journalist and TeacherTap co-founder Laura McInerney, General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders Jeff Barton, AQA Chief Executive Colin Hughes and Chief Executive of the Chartered College of Teaching Alison Peacock for their reaction to exams 2022. But firstly, let's talk about some of the mitigations in place this year. What's happening with optionality? Do teachers have more of a choice next year, Gráinne?
They do indeed. So for the 2022 exams, teachers of English literature, ancient history, history and geography are able to drop an optional unit. And that means that there's going to be like a core unit and optional units. Core units, you've got no choice over, but the optional units, you opt in for. And so that means that the curriculum isn't quite as packed as previous years, and those students who have had lots of disruption won't be as affected, because if lockdown happened when they were studying, for example, Jekyll and Hyde, no one can really remember who Langdon was or who Utterson was. It doesn't matter, because their teacher can opt them out from being assessed on it.
Oh, I think that's obviously really, really helpful for teachers and for pupils, when as you say, they might have had lots and lots of disruption where they're studying a particular text and might be really difficult to kind of come back to it after so many months off school. When I was speaking with Colin Hughes, who's the chief executive of Exam Board AQA, he also spoke about this, and he said, that while the mitigations are really helpful, we do have to be a little bit realistic about what can be achieved through mitigation. Here's what he had to say.
I think they'll be helpful. I don't think anybody believes, Catherine, that they're the solution to everything that's happened. It's just not available, that is it, really. I mean, this group of students are going to be, in some respects, the worst affected by the pandemic. And, and when you're looking at sort of adaptations to papers next year and advance notice and all these things, they help a bit, but they don't solve the problem. Mm. No. So I think we have to be realistic about that. We're doing what we can within the constraints available.
It's interesting that optionality has also sometimes been viewed as advantaging higher ability pupils, but it's now being put forward as an option for those subjects. So when I spoke with Colin yesterday, he said that this is unlikely to be an issue with such a limited range of subjects. But I have heard before that it can be quite difficult for pupils to have a little bit more choice when they're sitting a paper, even if their teachers prepped them that they're definitely going to be doing a particular topic and shouldn't answer on another topic. Gráinne, do you think that will be difficult for pupils to navigate, or do you think they're going to have enough time to be prepared on that?
I think the sad thing about this is that it'll be really difficult for the sort of students who find exams difficult anyway. We know this happens every single year because we get the data from the exam boards and we can see the number of students who answer questions on the text that they weren't meant to, and it happens all the time, and it's that confusing thing. You're in the exam hall, you panic. Who hasn't made a mistake like that in an exam? I bet you've made a mistake like that in an exam. I definitely have before, and it's one of those things that we're going to make the exams easier in some ways, but the actual sitting of exams and the admin, that paperwork side, will be a little bit trickier for certain students. And I imagine there's going to be a lot of like gesturing in the exam hall saying, you're only doing section B, don't try and do section A. So I can imagine that the mocks this year will be very interesting to try and weed out all those mistakes. Make those mistakes when it doesn't matter in your mock. Don't do it in the real thing.
Absolutely. And in terms of sort of saying, we've all had experience of this, not so much at school, but at university, I definitely did that in a paper and I infringed the rubric and dropped my mark by a whole 10 marks. Never forget it. When I was speaking with Colin about this, he did say, though, that he thinks that because it's only being done in a limited range of subjects, that, it might be workable, and that yeah, pupils will just go through what they're doing in such a lot of detail when it comes to things like English literature and history and what topics they should definitely be answering on, that it will be okay.
I think we're all working on the assumption that it's the latter, because actually what we have been through is really quite a detailed subject by subject process to think what might work, how do we make sure that we don't, open up cans of worms by doing some of this stuff. And make sure that teachers get, I know that teachers would have liked more notice, and that frankly is completely understandable, but at least there will be sufficient notice to be able to guide students and hopefully not hit some of those problems that you hit with just suddenly landing the students themselves with a much wider range of options in what's otherwise a conventional exam.
But concerns have also been raised about this by Jeff Barton as well. Here's what Jeff had to say.
Yeah, I think that whilst I was one of those people who kind of liked the idea of optionality early on, I had found myself ensconced in endless meetings talking about it. I've been increasingly persuaded that it is complicated from two angles. It's complicated from an exam board point of view of, so how do you put together a paper which people can navigate their way through? What does that look like, and what are the logistics? It is complicated stuff. But secondly, I'm even more persuaded that actually the people who get disadvantaged by this are young people who don't bring that kind of mixture of skills and kind of confidence to be able to identify what they should and shouldn't focus on, which questions they should or shouldn't do. And that's why I think what we're ending up with really is something which allows the teacher to help the young person to know the kind of questions and the kind of topics, not the exact questions, but there's the kind of questions and the kind of topics, in order that you've then got 3 months from February onwards to be able to prepare towards that. So that's different from a young person stressed to the eyeballs because they're doing exams, trying to remember which questions should they be doing, which topics have they covered, haven't they covered, and in some cases panicking because of it. So I think we've got less optionality, even though once we were all waving the flag for optionality, probably makes sense to be honest.
Interestingly, Jeff also, as we've mentioned, said that this can be a particular issue for pupils in humanities subjects where they can really struggle to choose the right questions, even within a normal year, as we've just been talking about.
I mean, even in a normal exam paper, young people were in English literature having to move through those question papers to find a text that they had studied and then to choose one or two questions on that text. Even in normal times, it would still be the case quite often in my experience that a young person would choose a text they hadn't actually studied, which was always kind of problematic. So I think the more we can avoid that, the better. But I think you're probably right, it is in subjects like that where that level of optionality will potentially be there, and all the more reason that what teachers will need to do is to be helping young people in advance to how do you find your way through that, how do you make sure you've hit on the right text.
But apart from in those subjects, pupils sitting other GCSEs and all of the A-level students, they're going to have advanced notice of topics. Now, do we think this will be enough to mitigate learning loss for this year? I spoke to Teacher Tap co-founder and education journalist Laura McInerney about what this means for the cohort, because she says no mitigation will truly give pupils the time back that they've missed. Here's what she had to say.
I mean, the most useful thing for students who've experienced learning loss is if we could time travel, right? And if we could go back and give them the time back. And the problem is we can't do that. So I think nothing is going to be as effective as time travel would be. And there's different mitigations going on. So in some cases, there's going to be optionality, and that means they'll know in advance which parts of the paper can be dropped. There are other things going on where they'll be given information in advance, whether that's going to be topics about what's going to be in the paper and what's going to be specifically covered, or whether they're going to be allowed formula sheets in. All of those things, I think, go some way to making the exam series this year slightly better for the students, a better experience. You may be able to cut down on your revision time, or at least you'll be able to use your revision time more effectively, and that will be helpful. I just don't think any of it is going to mitigate. And the biggest problem you've got is everyone's been hit so differently. If you're a student that was out for the three or four times in the first months of your GCSE versus a student who's not had any time out, but maybe a teacher went out with COVID for a really long period of time, they're just such different experiences. So I think it will mitigate a bit. I don't think it will mitigate evenly. And ultimately, all we can do is try and make it a slightly better experience if we're going to go with exams, which we are.
And I've got to say, I completely agree with Laura on this one. And I also think that, you know, if you're helping all students, this doesn't disadvantage those that have had lots of time in school. So if we're advantaging everybody, then it doesn't account for that loss of learning, does it, Catherine?
No, it really doesn't. And I think, you know, this is a crucial issue with some of the mitigations that have been put in place, is that for some students, they're going to be facing a lot more disruption and uncertainty than others. We don't really know yet what might happen this year in terms of the pandemic. And I think it's really being discussed as though, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, exams go ahead and everything will be fine. And we're, you know, we have this plan B, but actually we're past the worst of the pandemic. But when I was speaking with Jeff Barton of the Association of School and College Leaders about this, he did point out that we aren't out of the woods yet, and we still face quite a lot of uncertainty about whether we'll see more disruption in schools because of COVID.
Yes, I think in principle, when the ideas around mitigation were formulated, we thought, yes, those seem pretty sensible. And as you say, they include giving data sheets in advance. Might be some case studies, might be some optionality, though I don't think there will be a lot of that. There will be modifications to papers. So there's still detail around all of that. What does it mean? I think if there would be any hesitancy in my voice, it's the fact that we know that we've got at least 100,000 young people currently not in school because they've got symptoms and tested positive. And we don't know yet whether that is starting to drop, or whether it's going to stay the same, or if it's going to rise. I think if we continue to see high rates of non-attendance by young people, then inevitably there will be calls that those mitigations either don't go far enough, or that the date on which they're being announced, currently February the 7th, is too late. And that's a result, I think, of a context of uncertainty, and we just don't quite know where that will take us next.
So I think, as his comments show, it's very difficult to see whether some schools or some areas might see further disruption this year. We also saw this week that they'd announced things like formula sheets in maths and combined science and in physics as well. Gráinne, do you think those are going to be enough? I guess they're another mitigation measure that only really works across the board rather than for particular students who have their education disrupted.
So I think the formula sheets are interesting because you would think that would only advantage those students who are probably at the lower end of the spectrum, like in terms of ability, because if you don't know the formulas off by heart, then you're probably still like a novice in that subject, and it might be like an area of development. And, you know, I imagine I'm not a teacher of maths or physics, or thankfully no one's ever asked me to teach science. But if you're needing formula sheets, I imagine that those are the trying to get a grade 4 students rather than the nailing a grade 9 student. So it'll be really interesting to see where the grade distribution is for those subjects where they've introduced those handy sheets, because I don't know. I'm thinking back to my time in the classroom, and if somebody gave me an equation sheet in physics, I'd probably just bomb out as badly as I did in the real thing, because they didn't really mean anything to me anyway. Like, they're only as useful. Those sort of things, those tools are only as useful as if you've got the skills to actually put them into practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's I think you're completely right. I think it will be I wonder whether it will make a lot of difference to higher ability students who can use the formulas and might have memorized them anyway. And for students who've missed out time on the subject or who find it more difficult, is it really going to be helpful? Because ultimately, as you say, it's about understanding how to use those and how to manipulate them. It's a little bit like, to move on to kind of safer home turf for both of us, it's a bit like with English literature, if you have the book in the exam or not, you know, that can often be a hindrance for students who find the subject more difficult because they're kind of racing through trying to find certain extracts in the book in the exam. And actually, although it seems really helpful to have the text there, it sometimes isn't.
Yeah, I have 2 points on that. So first of all, formulas is fine. Second of all, I had to look that up. I had to double check it, but it's definitely fine. Second of all, absolutely yes on the text. Like, how many times have you set the class a task, given them the text so they can do it as an open book, and they sit there and just read the book? Like, we've read the book. You've done the book. Like, why are you reading it again now? That was not the time. Oh, I just thought I'd reread that section. No, you need to write. This time is for writing. So, yeah, having the book can be a help and a hindrance sometimes. And I imagine that perhaps with the having them in maths and science, maybe it's a similar sort of thing. It's helpful for those who just want to double check it. But if you don't know them in the first place, just having them in front of you isn't going to help with that, applying them to the question, like knowing which questions you need to use them for and then applying them correctly and knowing how to use them in the calculations. I don't know. I wonder how helpful they'll be.
It's I think it'd be interesting to sort of see what teachers of those subjects feel about it and whether they think it will be a much of a leg up for students, really. Because as you say, it's all about whether they know how to use them. I think teachers are going to sort of welcome the clarity of this week's decision, I think. I spoke to Alison Peacock yesterday, who's chief executive of the Charter College of Teaching. And she did say, you know, that the clarity is very, very useful, but she also echoed Jeff Barton's comments in saying, you know, we're not out of the woods where COVID is concerned, and that these announcements could have been made earlier. And I suppose with all of these mitigations, if they had come right at the beginning of the school year, there would have been that little bit more time to embed them in teaching. Here's what she had to say.
So I think what teachers have really wanted is clarity about as far as they can possibly have it for exams in 2022. And so the kind of certainty with which Ofqual have announced, exams will go ahead, the days in which the exams will be published will be on separate weeks, all this kind of thing, gives a sense of return to normality. The reality, though, is that actually, however much we want normality, the world is still in a very precarious state. And so it feels as though those announcements that have been made about decisions for 2022 could have been made at least several weeks ago. They could have given, you know, at least the first month of term some certainty for teachers and for students. I think the consultation that they've just announced around future tags, the potential for tags and what that will look like. That's the kind of thing that teachers are worried about. They're worried that suddenly there will be a new variant, something will happen unthinkable with the virus and we'll be back to where we were in 2021. And the workload associated with tags for many schools, although they did a brilliant job, felt quite unbearable at points. So I think the mitigations could go further in the sense that youngsters have had an incredibly variable experience of COVID. So some youngsters have had an almost uninterrupted period of schooling, whether they've been able to have face-to-face teaching or digital access. Some youngsters have been very ill, or they've lost close family members, or they haven't been able to work because of their home circumstances in the same way. And I think if teachers were able at least to submit mitigating circumstances to exam boards, I think that would be something that could try and make things fairer.
And the other thing that obviously is coming across from her comments there that we've spoken about already is this issue of differential learning loss. So a lot of these mitigation measures are across the board. And we have to wonder whether they're going to be fair enough or sufficient enough to really help pupils who have had a very disrupted time of it. What do you think, Ronnie? Do you think they will go far enough, or do you think that possibly there will need to be kind of other measures put in place later on if we see more disruption?
You know, as you were speaking just then, it does make me think that, you know, no year are exams fair. Exams are never fair because the experiences of children in schools vary so greatly. You've got schools where you've got fully staffed departments and every student has a teacher for the entirety of their exam, like their exam study, and other schools where they struggle to recruit and it means that they're understaffed, and you have a revolving cycle of cover teachers, supply teachers, new teachers that come, then they leave, and then you get a replacement. And for those children, that's not fair, is it? Every year we have disruptions to learning. Every year it's not fair. And we know that those disruptions with the staffing in particular is more concentrated in schools where you've got high levels of free school meals, because those schools are the ones that struggle more to recruit. That all aside, do I think that these mitigations are enough to cover the loss of learning? No, I don't think it is at all, because we don't really know how great the loss of learning is. And what would be really useful to know is the results of the national reference test that they did with the last year's Year 11. And then that might give us a bit of an idea of how great the learning loss is. At the moment, we're just trying to guess. We don't have any firm national data, actually, on how great that learning loss has been. And even when we do get the national reference tests, we won't know what the private schools did. It won't tell us about the difference between state and independent schools. So, you know, I do feel like we should have a better understanding of what the national picture's like in order to then make a judgment on what mitigations are necessary. And until they release that data, we won't even know what it's like in the state sector. And until we actually do exams in the summer, and look at the standards and the marks and how children did then, we're still not going to know. So do I think these mitigations go far enough? My gut tells me no, but I'd like to see the data before I made a complete decision on that.
Absolutely. No, I think you're completely right that with the national reference test, it would give us a really good kind of guide on what learning loss there has been, if this cohort that going through to sit GCSEs in 2022 are significantly weaker in any areas, and I think that would be really important to sort of have that information there, because they are the first group post pandemic as it stands to go into public exams. So that is, I think, a very tough thing for them. And yes, we do have to reset at some point, but it's obviously puts them in a very difficult position. If they have had learning loss, that means they, you know, that they're significantly weaker than, say, the cohort who were going into sit exams last time that happened in 2019. Which brings me on to the other kind of big news from this week, which was that grade distributions in 2022 are going to look very different to 2020 and 2021. When teacher assessments were used, and they aren't going to be a complete switchback to 2019, but they are going to be a midway point between 2021's grade distribution and 2019's. But we do know that they're likely to be lower than 21 and 2020. So the grades are going to be lower than those 2 years in the pandemic where teacher assessment was used. In some ways, it is a more generous option than that advised by head teachers at ASCL, as Colin Hughes said to me yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, there's a range of things that we could do, and different people have come out saying, let's go straight back to 2019 in 2022. ASCL did that, you know. You've actually got head teachers calling for that. And I get why they did that. They're essentially saying, you know, there is pain here. Let's get the pain over and done with, rather than drag it out. and then on the other side, you've also got to look at the fact, as I've just mentioned, that this is a group of students who are the most affected by school closures and so on and so forth. And does it seem right that they should take the whole thing in one go? And that, I think, is why others leaned towards the notion of a glide path. Mm. The question then is how steep or shallow do you make the glide path? And do you do it in a couple of years, or do you do it over a slightly longer period of time? And the same sort of questions arise, don't they, about for how long do you prolong the pain, if you like? So my fundamental view really is there is no sort of completely happy answer to the situation we're in. The fact is that we're dealing with really very substantial inflation grades, particularly at the top end of A level. The figure that everybody quite understandably keeps mentioning is the number of A's and A stars at A level jumping from roughly 25 to roughly 45%. Of course, importantly, most of that happened in 2020. And so, can we just sort of dial that straight back from 45 to 25 in one go? Or, I think that would be pretty tough.
And I have to say, it's an interesting point of view that he puts across, that there does have to be a kind of reset. There's no easy answer here. And in some ways, this does give that cohort a little bit of leeway in not just having one big jump back to 2019.
It's a really interesting issue. And whether there's a happy answer in the situation, this also came up when I spoke with Laura about how we could possibly make things fair.
We've only just surveyed on this. I still don't have the results. We're a little bit away from it. So I'm going to be giving you my view rather than what teachers necessarily say. So maybe I'm going to turn out to be completely wrong with what they think. But the problem of being a regulator is that there's a thing that feels good on the ground. So a more simple example is to start with medical regulators, right? We've got a baby in front of us, and unless this baby is given a very expensive medicine, it's going to die. Of course, if you're in the room with that family, with the baby, the right thing to do is give them the medicine. None of us would ever say anything else. The problem is, if it's very, very expensive and it's only going to give the child maybe another 24 hours of life, if you're a person who has to sit in an office and be the regulator, you have to look at a massive envelope of money. You have to try and work out who should get it, and you have to try and work out what the fair thing to do is. And possibly when you're taking everybody else in the health service into account, all of the other people that could be treated, you decide not to give the medicine to that child. And that feels awful. Then we think about this in an exam system, right? What might be the right thing to do in 2022 and 2023 on the ground? If I was a teacher in the school with my students, I'd absolutely want them to have the same experience that the students the last few years have had, which is those slightly higher grades, because it's meant more of them can go on to college, more of them can get into university, and other people have had to deal with the fact there's not enough university places. At least my kids have got what they need. But if I'm Ofqual and I'm sitting in an office and I'm looking at the fact that there's lots of people to take into account, there's all the people who sat their exams in 2017 and 2018 and 2019. There's all the people who are going to take their exams in future, which, if grades go up at some point, do we have to add an extra grade on the end, or do we have to recalibrate so that everybody isn't getting the top grade? What do we do about the fact that universities have got to try and plan their places? So if you're in Ofqual's position, I think you may think, well, the midpoint helps us do something this year. By 2023, we get back. The group that have been badly affected is this sort of 4-year block of people. But after that, the people who were before and after all feel like they're on an even keel, and so they've been well treated. The downside is, by having a midpoint, you have a moving target for 2 years, and I'm not sure that is that helpful for the universities. Sam Friedman wrote a piece for TES this week where he's pointed this out. He's also pointed out the fact that the 2019 rate wasn't a real rate. It's not as if 2019 was any more real than any other year. It's just what we'd all decided and we'd all agreed upon. But I can see why you get to that point of the midpoint. I think it is reasonable and rational, but I just don't know if teachers will agree with me or not on this.
You can definitely see the need for a reset. But it does suggest that pupils in the 2022 cohort, as we've said, they might see a much lower proportion of the top grades that we've been used to over the past 2 years. I mean, the 2021 results that have just been through for A-level, they were quite astonishing with, I think it was something like over 40% of entries awarded an A or an A star. I also asked Colin Hughes about whether universities and further education colleges are going to be equipped to deal with the variations in grading from 1 year to the next as they look at applicants. So if they have an applicant from 2022 with these lower grades, how will that vary compared to an applicant from 2021?
It's a reasonably complicated picture. We actually have a sort of an HE advisory board, a group of principally sort of admissions officers and so on. And I was with them last week, funnily enough, and their overriding hope is an expectation is that they get at least a reasonably early, clear indication of what the outcomes are likely to be, because mm-hmm. then they can go into the process of setting tariffs and so on and so forth with a fair idea of what proportions of students are going to come through with those mm-hmm. 11 grades, and they can therefore set their entrance standards and make offers in a reasonably rational way. Whereas reasons we all understand, in 21 they were somewhat guessing and were also under, if you like, a sort of social pressure really to take in as many students as they possibly could, given the way things had panned out. And then, of course, in 2020, it was another story. Mm. So you've got the overspill from that, as you rightly say. There is, if you like, an overshoot of students into next year whose grades are based on a different set of standards to the ones that will be applied next year. I think universities can, they're very skilled at doing this. They can get their head around it. They know how to do it. The problem they have had last year and this year is the inability to make reasonably sound predictions about, what numbers of students will be coming through with what kinds of grades.
And Jeff Barton has also suggested that a quick switch back to 2019 would in some ways be fairer, but that at least teachers and pupils now have more certainty.
Well, what we said to Ofqual is the most important thing is to make a decision. And when you make that decision, you're not going to please everyone with that. Indeed, you might end up pleasing pretty much no one with that. But at least if a young person says to their history teacher, what will the standard be in history next year? What grades will I need to get to university with my A-level in history? At least we're going to have some sense of what that might look like. So I think we welcome, first of all, the fact there is both a decision on standards, but also a plan B, which we might talk about in a second. It will be the first point. Now, the reason that we at Askell decided that what we would do is to say, let's go back to 2019, which feels, I think, to a lot of people, very counterintuitive. I think people were surprised by that, because it takes such a clear line. And essentially what the narrative around that was saying is, we've had 2 years when we haven't had exams. If we are going to have exams, why would you have a mixture of standards from the non-exam and the exam period? Mm. Wouldn't it bring absolute clarity to employers, universities, to everybody, to actually say, go back to the kind of standards you had in 2019? Now, the reason that's counterintuitive is that what people say is, but that's really unfair to young people who've already had a really unfair time. But actually, when you think about it, it's being generous to young people, going back to 2019 standards, because what you're saying is you're going to have the same chance of getting a grade A star, a grade A, a grade B, whatever it might be, as your brother and sister who were sitting exams in 2019, even though you will have missed out on learning. Can you see? There is actually a real sense that this is quite a generous approach, and the benefit it brings is that you can then clear the decks and not have to worry about what does 2023 look like, for example, because you have brought the system back into line. Now, underlying all of that, the Askell view is that we really have to reform our exam
heavy system, and we have to look at comparable outcomes and all of that stuff. That becomes easier to do when you have sorted out the relatively short-term issue of how we get back from a period of tags to a period of examinations. So I totally understand why the decision was made by Ofqual, signed off by the Secretary of State, to say actually that would be quite a difficult idea to explain to the general public, I think, and therefore by having a point between 2019 and 2021 will seem fairer. There is a sense, though, that fairness is a kind of relative concept in all of this. So whilst it's easier to explain, it doesn't have the clarity that the Ofqual view had. But I go back to my opening point. We've got a decision. It's one which we welcome because it does make it easier for teachers now to focus on teaching.
I think the point he makes there about a midway point being easier to explain to the general public does make sense. But going back to Laura's point about 2022 now being sort of something of a moving target, you can see how, in a way, Ofqual's idea of a complete reset coming in 2022 could be fairer. And of course, for some who question our current exam system, this is all further proof that perhaps there should be a complete rethink of exams. Here's Alison Peacock on this.
And then overall, the whole kind of admission that we're not going to return to 2019 standards, but we will do by 2023, and in the interim, we'll kind of iterate towards that. Essentially, that it just exposes the reality that only a certain number of students will ever achieve certain grades. And I think there's a real question mark that has emerged over the past number of years about the veracity of exams, the additional anxiety produced by exams. And so this is what's led to a whole range of different assessment committees coming together to say, let's look at this in the round over a period of time to say how we might assess better.
We also learned that a new top grade at A-level is probably off the table now. So in some ways, this is likely to be a relief for teachers. They don't have to grapple with an entirely new system. And Laura McInerney agrees, and she talks about this here.
I think doing it quickly would have been a problem, so I'm glad that they're not just bringing it in this year. Long term, I have no problem with a grade 10. We actually would expect, as generations go forwards, we get better at teaching. I mean, think, if you're 16 now and you're smart, think of all the access you can have to learn more about, say, World War II if you do history. And if you were sitting your exam 30 years ago, you can watch videos, you can read Wikipedia pages. So I would expect that actually at the very top end, the very brightest, probably are getting slightly cleverer over time. And bringing in a grade 10 to deal with that isn't a problem. But doing it just because you've recalibrated your grades accidentally because there was a pandemic, that's more of a problem.
Yes, when I spoke to Colin Hughes about this, he also pointed out that a new grade could create issues around comparability between different cohorts.
For very good reason, you know, given what Ofqual's task is, you know, it's completely understandable that they have approached it in the way that they have, and I totally get it. And I think, you know, the incoming chief regulator had a quick and important decision to make, and has done that in the way that one would anticipate. I mean, I think the question about, you know, we all know that it was possible to look at a grade reset. I think there the alternative, surely, is to just have a period of stability, get back to a stable place, and then think again. Because obviously, if you are going to reset grades, it's actually preferable, probably, to do that at a time when you also do any broader examination reforms that you might want to do. So I think where Ofqual has landed is a sort of sensible place in between those two positions that says let's just get to a steadier place. And of course, you know, it's always open to think again further down the line. And the other thing, I suppose, is it minimises disruption around schools in a period when probably, I mean, it's my best guess that teachers, students and parents really don't want the system to be mucked around with in the 2 or 3 years immediately after the pandemic. There are other things on their minds, if you see what I mean.
And as he says here, he seems to be really calling for a period of stability, which I think, you know, certainly exam boards in particular would like, but also it would be useful for teachers and pupils to have some time where the grading scale doesn't change after all this upheaval.
Other thoughts that people have had are some sort of medium-term look at, you know, whether or not to introduce an extra grade or restyle the grading so that you have essentially a reset. You know, you might move from five letters to six numbers and so on. And again, that creates difficulties because of comparability. So there isn't a single option that has an entirely satisfactory sort of, oh, that's fine, with one bound we were free, you know, that's just not available because of, well, bluntly, because of the extraordinary situation we've been through.
Now, the other big thing to talk about this week is the Plan B for 2022. Now, we know that teacher-assessed grades are back as an option, but they are back with a difference, it looks like. Do we think that teachers and schools are going to be reassured by what Ofqual and the DfE have said regarding workload when it comes to tags?
So I think that the workload for the new tags version 2.0, does sound like it could be a lot easier, especially because we've got more time to think about how we're going to implement them. We're not going in thinking we're going to have exams and then, oh, suddenly reverting to tags. We're starting off the school year knowing that tags are going to be a possibility and therefore they should be run in this way. And there's a lot more guidance over how they should be run. And a lot of the workload came from that stress of not knowing what the right way to do it was and talking to teachers and head teachers and middle leaders and senior leaders. Nobody seemed to be able to come to an agreement on the best way to do it. And now the rules seem a lot more clearer and there's a lot more clarity over it. And that's going to make it easier. But in terms of marking, I think that's still going to be, you know, there's that extra pressure now. We're not just marking to improve the student. You're marking and trying to think, right, what grade would I actually give this child? And those are two different things when you mark. It's totally different marking to try and improve somebody and marking to come up with a, like, end grade. So I think the workload's still going to be there, but I definitely think it's an improvement on last year.
No, absolutely. And I think it definitely seems to be designed so that pupils aren't going to have all this pressure of whenever they complete a piece of work, then it may be going towards their teacher assessed grade. So I think the idea is that they don't end up doing sort of assessment after assessment continuously, that where they always feel like they're on kind of the high alert for an exam, which I think both teachers and pupils, you know, over the last year, when we were doing surveys about this and about the workload involved in tags, they found it kind of enormously stressful. So I think that is probably a move in the right direction to sort of say, well, where you've got assessment points within the year, then that's going to be, that can be where you gather your evidence. Here's what Laura McEnany had to say on this.
From the information I've seen so far, it does seem as if it's a more limited set of things that you can do. So the assessment should only take the same amount of time that the exams would take, rather than it can take any amount of time, it could be anything. I think that helps most people focus their minds on it probably being something like a mock exam at specific points in time. Doesn't mean it isn't challenging. Anyone who's had to sit and mark loads of mock exams knows that they take hours and hours. And I used to teach the entire year group the GCSE citizenship. So you can imagine how many of those I would have had to mark. But I think it would still be easier than what everybody went through last year with teacher assessed grades. So they've gone some way to making it a bit better.
And I also spoke to Jeff Barton about this as well, and whether he could kind of see any issues put forward in the Plan B. He was keen to stress that, you know, the subtext coming through from Ofqual and the DfE is to get pupils' work ready kind of sooner rather than later for tags in the academic year.
Not really. I think there is a subtext to that Plan B, and I'm going to talk to our members about it today, because I think if you were running a school or if you're a head of history or biology or head of science, I think the subtext is, let's learn from the past 2 years, and let's get some of this assessment under young people's belt. But whereas in the previous 2 years, particularly last year, it ended up that a youngster didn't know what did count and what didn't count, and stuff that they had done before Christmas and were told, you're just doing this as a practice exam, suddenly was then resurfacing and being used in that calculation of the teacher assessed grades. This time, if I was running a school, what I'd be saying is, look, before Christmas, we're going to have a week or a two-week period for year 11, year 13, which we might not call mock exam week, we might just call it formal assessment week, but we're going to do something in that week which will feel like the kind of questions or the kind of activities you would do in the exam hall, and that will provide a safety net, and it will do two things. It'll be a safety net in case the exams can't all run next year, because you will have done something and you will know you were doing it because it might count, so there's no kind of confusion about that. But secondly, it means that other stuff we're doing, not in that window of time, won't be being used. And therefore, in terms of young people's anxiety levels, mental health, and also just the ability of teachers to actually just teach rather than feel they've got to constantly assess, it clears the decks for that. So I think we will be saying to our members, up to them, of course, but I think we would say, to think that between autumn half term and Christmas, it would make sense to do something in every subject so that you've got that piece of work. Probably worth doing the same thing in the spring term, and either late in the spring term or early in the summer term as well. I think all of that actually makes sense and shows the system kind of learning from what we weren't able to do last year.
So there has been a lot of discussion on workload, and it's really interesting that there's kind of some doubts about whether teacher workload is really going to be reduced if exams are cancelled again. Alison Peacock said that, you know, given how conscientious teachers are, that although there is this kind of new focus on having certain assessment points within the year that would already be there and that they would be used for tag evidence, that there could still be a lot of anxiety and stress regarding this plan B, because teachers will still be wanting to do the exact right thing by their pupils, and so they'll still be putting pressure on themselves about this process.
I think teachers are incredibly conscientious and they want to do the best for their students. So I think that if we have to go ahead with tags, they will still be a tremendous workload for teachers because of those reasons. So, I mean, it's welcome to see that they're trying to recognise those issues. But teachers are incredibly conscientious, morally driven professionals, and they will want to do the best they can for their students. And ultimately, that will lead, I think, to increased workload, particularly if there's not, and it's through nobody's fault, but if we are in a situation where suddenly the exams can't go ahead and everything has to rush to doing something different, you know, it's that kind of, I think the profession has been frustrated over the past 18 months. That to some degree, there have been times when pretty much anybody could have said, this looks like it's heading in a particular direction. It's time now to really plan for an alternative approach. So whether it's school closures, whatever it's been, there's always been a kind of halo of surely somebody's going to make a decision in a minute. And I feel as though the quicker that these decisions can be taken and the more that they can enable teachers to plan effectively, the better. Even in a situation of a pandemic where nobody can actually say how it's going to play out, there's a sense that teachers still want that leadership that makes firm decisions and doesn't differ.
I think the other big question that's been coming through on this discussion is what we really do if there are some areas in the country that need special consideration if schools close, and whether we really are kind of home and dry in a way with this academic year, or whether we are going to see sort of some areas of the country go into lockdown again, whether we are going to see kind of further restrictions brought in place in some schools.
Because we've seen it before, haven't we? When you look at the map of the UK and when you see the different areas that have been hit more than others, like we know that the North East have had lots and lots of lockdowns. We know that they're in trouble now. We're hearing about the number of staff that were sick and the number of children. What was it last week? Over 100,000?
Yeah. It's really, and we're also we're looking into this at the moment, but the kind of the different levels of advice from kind of local public health teams, from the DfE, about what schools do if they're in an area of high COVID rates. And there are some schools where they're having kind of real difficulty already. So I think this idea that, it will definitely be fine, exams can definitely go ahead, I don't think we know that. We do know that exams will only be cancelled nationally. So it's not as though they'd go ahead in some areas and not others. But then it does just have this huge question mark over if you are in a school that then needs to close, or where there are certain kind of safety arrangements that are brought in during the year. How does your exam board mitigate for that? Will it be a case of special consideration being used?
I mean, that would be sensible, wouldn't it? So we have the special considerations that we use ordinarily. And I remember last year when we thought exams were going to go ahead, and we were contacting JCQ and saying, you haven't really put a lot in the special considerations about coronavirus. And they're like, nope, these are fine. This is all going to be fine. And I wonder if this year we'll see something different about how teachers can report the need for special considerations for certain students who have been particularly disrupted in their learning, especially in the run-up to exams, like immediately before they sit their exam. So if you go to hospital in the 2 weeks before you take your English exam, I know that there's like a percentage increase, isn't there, you get on your paper like this. So it's all worked out. If you go to casualty, you get more, but if you go to the GP, you get less, and all that kind of thing. So are they going to work out a way to measure, I tested positive 3 weeks before I sat my English exam. Does that mean that they get a little bit? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... are there things going to be there to help with that kind of level of detail before the exams, to deal with the exams?
I mean, I think that will be in place. So speaking to AQA, they sort of, Colin said that essentially like anything that was on the table for kind of mitigating factors before exams were cancelled last year can be used again this year. So I think special consideration is certainly one. And the other thing that I suppose we haven't mentioned is that exam papers are going to be really spread out. So there is also that.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're going to be. So if a student does, miss their maths GCSE paper in because of kind of isolation, then there's going to be quite a significant chunk of time. It's 10 days, isn't it, before they have to maybe set another one. And that obviously, that 10 days, it gives them time to isolate if they need to. And so that's a very positive step as well.
And we should have a lot less isolations now, unless they change the COVID rules again. But you only need to isolate if you yourself have tested positive. So that's really good news for young people, I think, because then they won't be missing exams because they were once close to somebody who then went on to test positive. And the frustrations of that, I think you really feel that the injustice that young people would feel if that's why they missed out on going to sit their exams just because of that. So I think that's really good news, isn't it? Well, and there's now some welcome clarity for teachers, regardless of some of our concerns raised around the grading standard, but at least we have an answer. We've been asking for these what's going to happen for so long now. And I feel like this is a bit like Christmas when it came out, wasn't it? It's like, it's finally here. We know what's going to happen. So I think no matter what your feelings are about how far they've gone and whether or not these are the right decisions or not, at least we have something. So that's good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for listening to us on this subject. Obviously, please do check out the TES website as well for all of our latest views and comment on this issue. And do get in touch if you have any kind of other budding questions about exams.